Well, one of the questions you hear out in social media la-la land right now is, who's going to win a game first? The L.A. LeBrons or the Cleveland Cavaliers? I thought the Lakers were going to get one last night, fell in overtime to the Spurs. And that means the Cavs are next up. Tomorrow night they have a chance as they take on the Brooklyn Nets. We'll talk some Cavaliers now as we bring in Rick Nolan with the Chronicle-Telegram and the Medina Gazette. Rick, as always, we appreciate the time. Thank you so much for joining us. And if you look at those final scores, I think the first thing that pops out to you as a Cavalier fan is, what in the world can the Cavs do to fix a lot of their bugaboos defensively? Rick, in your mind, after watching these guys for a few games, what elements do you think specifically have caused the Cavs to totally collapse on defense?
I think it's a variety of things. Number one, they're still learning how they want to do certain things. Number two, the style of they play offensively is creating more possessions in a game. They've had some silly turnovers. They've given up a lot of points in transition. And number three, they just sometimes it doesn't even look like they're trying to play defense. I mean, that Hawks game for a while, second quarter and fourth quarter, it looked like the Cavs' goal was to hold the Hawks to a wide-open three-pointer because they got one after another after another. I think they made 10 threes in the fourth quarter. So it's definitely a work in progress. The downside is, you can only be as good as your personnel, even if you do everything correct. Kevin Love's been caught in some positions where he's been forced to try to guard guys that he's just not quick enough to guard. They've had some communication issues. And in today's NBA world, it doesn't take much for a team to get through 115, 125, 135. There's so many more possessions in a game. Definitely something they got to get ironed out ASAP.
Rick, are these problems that you think can be fixed, or is this just kind of who the Cavaliers are defensively?
Well, it's interesting. I asked Ty Lue prior to the game the other night what defensive challenges are presented by the way they're playing offensively, and his answer was none, which I find hard to believe because when you're playing that quickly, you've got to make sure you have a minimum of two guys and back on defense, and if you're going to crash the board, you better either get a rebound or get back quick. Now, they have done a pretty good job on the boards. They won that battle every game, but too many times an opponent has just gotten a rebound, a kick-out pass, a throw ahead, and a wide-open shot or a layup. I think Colin Sexton's going to be a good defensive player in the long run. He really, really struggled, of course, against Trae Young the other night. Some of it schematic, some of it probably ego, but I think he's a guy that can count on. I've never been the hugest fan of Tristan Thompson overall, but I think he's an average to above average defender. Rodney Hood's probably below average. Jetty, I think it's too soon to tell, and they're asking him to guard a lot of tough guys at the 2-3 position. And Love is an intelligent help guy who's going to always try to do the right thing. Mentally, he won't make a lot of mistakes, but physically, he is what it is. So they could get better, but they're never going to be a upper echelon defensive team. They just don't have good enough players to be that, even if everything goes perfect.
Sure, and I think if you were to look at the personnel on paper before the year began, nobody would have looked at that squad and said, you know what, we expect these guys to be one of the top defensive teams in the NBA. But as you look at what they've done so far this season, obviously you could take a look at the numbers, and there are going to be some names that certainly pop up. Jordan Clarkson, I know, is a guy that we talked about a couple of weeks ago because he really kind of changed the way he did things in the offseason. He changed his diet. He changed his workout routine. And he was a guy, I think, that we expected a lot more from last year, but he kind of got lost in the mix a little bit. Rick, the first three games of the year, he's come off the bench and he's provided an immediate spark, and he's the second leading scorer on this team. Is this the kind of thing we can expect to see him keep up throughout the course of the year?
Well, I don't know if he'll keep it 17.7 pace, but he's been their best player, I think, through three games. Definitely their most consistent player. He's in an ideal role for Jordan Clarkson, in that he's a licensed gunner off the bench. Go in, shoot the ball, score points. I think we talked before, my fear with Jordan Clarkson is this could be what his career is destined to be, as a mid-teen scorer off the bench on a bad team. I don't know that he's equipped to do much more than what he's doing now. But, you know, for this year and next, I think he can fill a valuable role that way. The big question, and again, I have my doubts, is how much his game can really evolve into an all-purpose player. He doesn't pass the ball a lick. He doesn't even see the floor. You might be able to start him, but if with those shortcomings, I personally think he's better suited for doing what he is doing right now, and that's score as many points as you can in a short amount of period of time as possible. And he's averaging 17.7. He's only playing a little bit over 23 minutes a game, so no problems with what he's done so far.
Yeah, he's certainly been exciting to watch off the bench for sure, and you wonder if he continues that. Would that be enough to get him into the starting lineup and change his role a little bit? I think that's something to look at moving forward. Boy, it was last night or earlier today, Coach Tyronn Lue had mentioned he was sending a message to his team. You either hustle and you play some defense, or you're going to find your butt on the bench. Can't help but think, if we're going to go back a year, you think he would have made those same comments last year, given the structure of the team a year ago?
Excuse me, pardon me. I don't know whether he may have, for all I know, but some guys didn't really have to listen last year. I think that's the one thing he has going for him this year is the hammer. I mean, he controls the playing time. Outside of Kevin Love, there's nobody on this team who's good enough to demand playing time without doing things the way he wants them to. So I don't have a problem with what he said. I hope he actually follows through on it. I hear coaches say that all the time in all different sports at all different levels. But usually when a coach has to resort to that threat, it's more of a sign, Andy, quite honestly, that your team's just not very good and not playing very well. I understand it. I hope for their case it helps, but this team's going to be a team that's going to give up, I think, a lot of points in a lot of games.
Hey, Rick, I understand Ty Lue obviously wants to win, and then we're accustomed with LeBron James here over the last 4 years of winning. But do you think this type of team, and I'm not saying talent-wise, but without the big-name players, without the LeBron James, the hard heads to figure out, do you think this is a team he enjoys coaching more?
I kind of see if I can word this the correct way. Number one, the pressure's off. You don't have the LeBrons and the Kyries. you know, that are bigger than the coach on this team. Kevin Love's a very good player, but he's also a player who's going to do everything you ask, and he wants to be loved and complimented. So I think he really has gotten kind of a breath of fresh air, so to speak, on the fact that the expectations are far from NBA Finals or bust like they have been in previous years. So I think he enjoys the teaching and the developmental aspects of things. I think he's under much less stress now than he was, you know, when they were contending. I think he feels like he can be more of a factor in whether they succeed or fail. In other words, he has a lot of buttons to push and a lot of decisions to make. Now, time will tell whether he can do that enough, and even if he does, if his players are good enough for it to ultimately result in a win on many nights. But I think he's actually enjoying this season out. He would be enjoying it a lot more if they were 3-0 or 2-1 or even 1-2. But, nobody except a few people with really rose-colored glasses on thought this was going to be an overly successful year. A lot of people picked 37, 38, 39. I had people tell me they were going to be 500 or a game or two over. I just shook my head. I picked 31, and I thought that might be a little too low when I did it, but my reasons are starting to pan out already. They're going to really struggle to win any games on the road unless they're against really bottom-tier teams. And they just got annihilated in one of the games. You could actually look at your schedule and say, okay, this one's a win. We're playing the Hawks, who might be the worst team in the league, in our home opener. And then you go out and lose by 22. So it's going to be a up and down, more downs than ups kind of year. And we'll just have to see where it goes from there.
Again, we're talking with Rick Nolan of the Chronicle-Telegram and Medina Gazette here on Bullseye on the Afternoon. And, boy, along those same lines, you feel like he's a little conflicted right now, Ty Lue, in that, you know, they want to go young, they want to develop, yet they've got some veterans here who could certainly help, but justifying enough playing time for the J.R. Smiths of the world when he's healthy enough to come back and contribute effectively, or, you know, a Kyle Korver or a Channing Frye with these guys not knowing how much they've got left of the tank. You feel like he's conflicted a little bit working out his rotations, trying to figure out how much he wants to play those guys at the expense of developing his young guys?
Yeah, and that's why I thought all the preseason plus bluster was a little out of line about how they're going to prove everybody wrong, how this is definitely a playoff team. I'm referring specifically to Tristan Thompson. But, I don't think JR is going to be in this team's rotation unless they really are just doing it to shake things up. Kyle Korver didn't play the other night, which I found a little odd, because I think he's a guy, if you play him and he plays pretty well, you could possibly move him for a younger piece or a pick. George Hill, who I've never been the biggest proponent of, has actually played pretty darn well through three games, but he's a 32-year-old point guard. How long are you going to go that route when you have a 19-year-old kid who's your future? And at some point, I think you got to just turn the reins over to him. And what kind of befuddles me more than anything is the insistence on starting and using fairly heavily a guy like Tristan. We've seen him for, 7 years now? He is what he is. And you have a guy like Ante Zizic, who's not in your rotation at all, but who is in his early 20s and has upside. Every time he gets on the floor, he puts up some numbers. Granted, it's garbage time in most regular season games, but get some really good moments in the preseason as well. I think that's why I think there's going to come a point in this season when they realize, hey, we're not as competitive as we thought we were going to be. Let's give Ante each rotational minute and see what we've got and get him some time and some experience. Sexton, I think, will happen, you know, sooner rather than later in that regard. So is he conflicted? I think the organization is a little conflicted. You know, this team's not going to be 19 and 63 like it was in 10-11, but, you know, is there that much difference between 19 and 63 and 29 and 59 or 32 and 50? I would argue there's not. I'd rather see young guys with upside and potential play and learn and develop than guys who are on the other side of the mountain already. And then there's, you know, a handful of those guys on this team who are playing rotational minutes right now.
I would agree with the idea that I think the franchise might be a little bit conflicted. The front office might be a little conflicted with that direction as well. Rick, before we cut you loose, got to ask you about how much you've followed LeBron and the Lakers to this point. You had tweeted something out a couple of days ago that I thought was pretty interesting. You know, when LeBron is putting forth 100% effort, he's still the best in the game. But getting him to consistently do that certainly was a challenge the last couple of years here, especially early in the year. But when you look at what he's got out there in L.A., they're 0-3. And, you know, sometimes losing breeds a losing culture, and the more they struggle, you know, the more it's going to be a challenge for Luke Walton and company to get him to put forth the effort that's necessary, especially defensively. You getting the impression that a few games into the year, and I get it, it's early, but a few games into the year, you know, he's kind of putting forth the effort that sometimes he put forth here early in the year where he appears anyways to be a little disinterested?
It could be an even bigger issue than that. You know, this is his 16th year in the league, and he's been in the finals, what, nine times now. And he's played USA basketball and then numerous summers. So there are many, many, many miles on those legs. And even as, you know, unique as LeBron is when it comes to being just a complete, total freak athlete, conditioned beyond belief, that we may be seeing just the very, very tiny beginnings of him entering that stage where it's not a matter of does he want to give the effort all the time. The bigger issue might be, can he still do that? You know, it happened to Kobe. It happened to Michael, and it happens to everybody at some point. And 33 is not super old for a 6'8", 250-pound guy, but when you've been playing NBA basketball since you were 18, you know, he may not be just, I want to word this right correctly, because he's still the most dominant player in the game when he's motivated and giving 100%, but I've already seen too many times in these Laker games where it just seems like I don't have that to give. I have to find my spots now to be able to rest on court, if that means taking a possession off offensively and just standing above the three-point line or not crash the boards really hard or not pushing the ball quite as often over the course of a game. I still think he's an MVP caliber player, but I don't think he can be that for an entire game, let alone every game, if that makes sense.
No, that makes perfect sense. And I think that there's certainly something to be said for what you just mentioned, because this is a conversation I feel like we're going to come back to at a couple points throughout the course of the season. I think to add to that, look, if the elements are still kind of the same, I think they're good enough that they're going to get in, but probably not as one of the top four seeds in the NBA playoffs, especially in the West. You wonder if this is a conversation that maybe picks up a little more steam nationally if he goes about it the same ways when the pressure is on and the lights are on in the playoffs, because obviously at that point all eyes are on him. But
correct.
Look, Father Time is undefeated. I mean, we could say what we want about what a genetic freak he is and he has been over the years, but he'll be 34 by the time the playoffs come around. So you have to wonder how that plays an effect on how he plays and the effort that he gives. Because like you said, look, I mean, he's getting to that point, and I get it. It's October. You're probably going to see that from a lot of guys. But if he approaches this the same way in the playoffs, Rick, you kind of wonder what that national narrative might be.
Yeah, I still think that he's got enough will and talent that I still think they're going to win a playoff series. And he's still going to, you know, when you look at his numbers, he's still going to average probably 25-8-6 or 25-6-8. It's just when you watch it, it just comes in spurts rather than all the time. He can take over a game, but then he needs a blow. Where we all remember the day when he could play all day, every day, and have boundless energy. The thing is, too, I think he's finding out that, you know, he doesn't have a guy like Kyrie that he can turn it over to for a while. He doesn't have a guy like Kevin Love that he can run pick and roll with, and the guy can pop out for an open three. I think we're seeing that this Lakers team has too many players with shortcomings that are – those shortcomings match what would be LeBron's strengths, and I mean drive and kick it. You can drive and kick all game, but if Brandon Ingram can't make a shot or you're baiting Lonzo Ball to take a shot, then, you know, it's not doing him ultimately any good. So it's going to be very interesting on their end to see, do they ride this thing out all year with these youngsters and try to add that piece, or do they try to make a move for some of the veteran, I don't want to say one-dimensional players, but the shooting specialists that LeBron's been surrounded by so often in his career when he's been successful, because right now they don't really have very many of those players on their roster.
Well, like I said earlier, it's going to be interesting to see how that develops throughout the course of the year. Rick, as always, we appreciate the time very much, and we'll do it again soon.
All right. Sounds good.
Thank you, Rick. Again, Rick.